In 1988, when I left Marillion, it was a difficult decision. You know, I was in a really big band, you know, a very, very famous band. We were playing big venues. We were selling lots of shirts. We were doing the whole bit. There was a huge organisation, and I hated it. I really felt I didn't have any control, and, you know, the writing was just not happening. I mean, I felt, you know, what made a lot of those Marillion albums so happening was the fact that there was a great combination between the lyric and the music. There was a great understanding. They both totally complemented each other. But when we were writing in 1988, it was just like we were writing in two different worlds, in two different planets. They were in a far more musical sense, which, you know, I always identified with, you know, that 1975, 76 period in progressive rock when everybody hated it. You know, when the musicianship, you know, became, it was so self-indulgent that it's just lost the soul. And I always felt that, you know, we had to, Marillion had a certain soul to it. There was always an inherent emotion to it, you know, and especially in the Clutch and Its Straws stuff. And I was writing this material on one side, and they were writing this totally other stuff. And there was nothing between it. There was nothing that was going to create, you know, the album that I really saw that Marillion had to do. I mean, I wanted to carry on down the Incommunicado, Sugar Mice, into song territory, you know. And they were into writing big, elaborate pieces. Therefore, you know, I couldn't really see the album happening. At the same time, you know, personally, I was going through a lot of problems, you know, both with, sort of like, you could say, with drinking, drugs, etc. I mean, which I identified as being, you know, a form of escapism from the pressures that were being brought on the band. I mean, there was a lot of pressures to come up with the album that was going to repeat the Misplaced Childhood success. I mean, Clutch and Its Straws sort of held ground in a way, but it didn't have the singles on it that really took it into Misplaced Childhood territory, which, you know, Misplaced Childhood now sold over 2 million albums. And I didn't want to be part of a formula band, and I really didn't want the band to start, you know, I didn't want to leave the band when it was on the spiral downward. I mean, I think because people would have gone, ah, this is the rat deserting the ship. And I want to leave the fans of the band, you know, a good memory. But at the same time, I mean, it's been probably the albatross around my neck, because what's happened is that because we never did a really bad album, everybody thinks that album that followed Clutch and Straws was going to be brilliant. I mean, a bit like the Beach Boys' Smile album, whatever it was called. And that's why people say, well, are you going to go back? And the answer to that is immediately no. I mean, you know, Marillion exists in a completely different form nowadays, and have been doing so for, you know, a longer time than I was in the band. I mean, you know, Steve Hogarth's been the singer of that band longer than I was the singer of it now. And, I really had to go solo. And, you know, when I left, I mean, I think both parties, both Marillion, the band, and myself, got on express elevators and somebody punched buttons and we didn't even know how far down we were going to go. And I think both of us were shocked how far we dropped. And if anything, because I didn't have, you know, the safety net of the name, you know, and I didn't want the name Marillion when I left. I mean, I wanted to go out as Fish. It was quite hard to take. And, you know, we were playing smaller venues, etc., etc. And, you know, both my ego and my attitude and everything, you know, I had to go through some major readjustments. And none more so than when I foolishly decided to take out, you know, a litigation against Thorn EMI. And it was very, very similar to, you know, the George Michael situation. But, I mean, the difference between myself and George Michael is that George Michael's a millionaire and I'm not. And some people forgot to tell me just how much a court case was going to come. And it was a bit like, you know, playing poker with somebody where they know you've got no money, so they just get thrown up with the stakes. And like making the movie where you've got the first reel where the little boy stands up and goes, I'm going to take this firm on, and he shouts out and declares that he's going to fight. And the middle two reels of the movie are, you know, where he basically gets everything kicked out of him, and the last reel, he stands on the court steps and wins the battle. I never got to the last reel. And we had to pay EMI an awful lot of money, and I went on a Polydor, which, you know, wasn't really the best move I could possibly have made, and there's a lot of personnel changes within that company. And, you know, I was suddenly going, what am I doing with my career? You know, and I was out there playing clubs, and we're driving back at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm doing stuff I was doing in 1981. And I think Raw Meat came out as the declaration. I mean, you know, I looked at people. I remember when Ted McKenna was in the studio and we were just jamming about with something, and that's when the lyric came about. I mean, Raw Meat for the Balcony. I mean, it's an old term I remember that I heard. I mean, some of my family way back were in music hall days, and it was like the Raw Meat for the Balcony were like the first acts that came on that were never going to be famous. that were always just going out there onto the stage because they wanted to be on the stage, but, you know, they were determined to be there. But they were sacrificed in order to just get the crowd geared up for the next acts. I mean, you know, the support of the support acts. And, you know, Raw Meat for the Balcony, it's a declaration of intent. It's like saying, well, yeah, it can get really bad out there, but at the same time, I don't really want to do anything else. This is, you know, this is where I fly my flag, and you know, you ain't going to move me from it. And I think especially we're coming at the Polydor situation and having been bitten so bad by lawyers and other business people. You know, I mean, it's the Suits album sort of like was born from that whole era, and Raw Meat was, you know, the ultimate statement. It's still, for me, it's still the finest lyric I've ever written. I mean, in my own opinion. I mean, it's, you know, it's one of the things, if they got a gravestone big enough, that's what I'd like carved in it, you know.